Hi, I'm Danny Elfman.
This is Shirley Manson.
This is Debbie Harry.
This is Chris Steyer Blondie.
This is Ronan Dorzabal from Tears for Fears.
This is Billy Idol.
This is Alex Ebert, a.k.a. Edward Sharp, giving the story behind the song.
Hi, this is Peter Chotti, host of The Story Behind the Song. Each month I speak to some of music's biggest artists to get the inside stories behind their most lasting and iconic songs. Join me for new episodes on the third Monday of every month on The Story Behind the Song from the Consequence Podcast Network, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Presenting a bold new adventure into Lovecraftian horror and black comedy, the Call of Cthulhu Mystery Program's acclaimed second series, The Terrible Secret of Lot X.
This is startling and strange, but darling, we might be onto something here. This is why we came to Arkham, after all.
The Necronomicon. Whatever your intent with this book, you will find more danger than answers.
In this program, our cast actually lives the terror.
The air gives way to the crushing depths. You're drowning. You're drowning in a sea of yellow.
It's an improvised audio drama that uses Chaosium's Call of Cthulhu role-playing game and the wits of our players. These poor souls never know what's going to crawl out of the darkness. Just search for the Call of Cthulhu Mystery Program or unlock all our secrets at CthulhuMystery.com.
Consequence Podcast Network.
There is a podcast that is a world unto itself.
A podcast as boundless as space and as timeless as infinity.
It is the place between light and shadow.
Science and superstition.
It lies between the pit of humankind's
fears and the summit of our knowledge.
No, your ears don't deceive you.
You're not imagining things.
This is that podcast.
You've entered
the fifth dimension.
Greetings, travelers. I'm your host, Michael Rothman, editor-in-chief of Consequence of Sound, and we've reached the end of the first season of Jordan Peele's revival of The Twilight Zone for CBS All Access. Yes, today we're talking about Blurry Man, written by Alex Rubens and directed by Simon Kinberg. But before we go all meta and step off set, let's introduce our round of co-hosts with me in the zone, starting with...
Hey guys, this is the editorial director from Consequence of Sound, Matt Mellis. It's a little bittersweet today, Mike.
Oh, you're sad?
End of the first season. Aww. I've been getting a little verklempt all day.
Verklempt?
Yeah. Talk amongst yourselves.
That's a reference to NBC's Saturday Night Live, starring Mike Myers.
I've heard of it, I think. Mm-hmm. But you can talk amongst yourselves. I'll give you a topic. How about the last episode of... the first season of Jordan Peele's reboot of The Twilight Zone.
Wow,
oh my God!
You guys talk.
You talk about it.
Speak of the devil, and I don't mean the devil. That's Busy Bee Diner. Who's to my right?
This is Samantha Kuykendall, a constant contributor to this podcast, and I'm super sad that we're going to be wrapping this up. It's been a long journey, 10 weeks, actually 9 weeks, because we did the first two.
Yeah.
But I'm sad to see it go.
And we have a special guest today, still in Florida, mind you, but across the airwaves. Who is here?
Why, this is Cap Blackard coming to you from Florida, the nexus of all realities, the same place where the membrane is so thin that it allowed a wayward duck from a planet far, far away and a dimension far from ours to be transported through the Everglades and ultimately to Cleveland. That's Howard the Duck, of course, and I am Cap Blackard.
I love Howard the Duck.
I do too.
And I love Howard the Duck more than I love this episode.
Blurry Man sucks.
All right. Well, as you can tell, we're gonna be going off script a little bit.
I was just reading an article, by the way, of how Howard the Duck's one of the worst 10 movies ever.
You know what?
Not true. Just not true.
Beg to differ.
Yeah. But hey, it's really important to acknowledge that my dear beloved partner, Eleanor Edwards, can't be here tonight and would love to be here tonight. But unfortunately, she is reporting from the toilet zone. She's very sick this evening.
Oh, that's awful.
It's rough.
That is awful.
Get well, Eleanor. Definitely, again, the brains of this dimension for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I will be hard pressed to keep up the pace that she has set, but I'm going to do my damnedest, and I've already started with toilet humor, so doing a terrible job.
So far, you got a ways to go.
Anyway, I should fully introduce myself, I suppose. Kat Blackard, the podcast network director here at the Consequence Podcast Network, and also head honcho of the Nerdy Show Network, showrunner of the audio drama The Call of Cthulhu Mystery Program.
Which you've probably heard promos for on this network, if not this very episode. Okay, well, we're all here. This is the end, and I think we should go a little off script ourselves. This is a very meta episode. You know, we literally see Jordan Peele as a character in this episode. So I figured to hell with all the segments, and we just have a free-form discussion. Now, because we're not going to have a synopsis, we're not going to do all our bells and whistles, I'll give the quote-unquote stars and souls. As I mentioned, this was written by Alex Rubens. He's written for Big Mouth, Key and Peele, Community, Rick and Morty.
Let's not forget Keanu.
And Keanu. And I actually am a fan of Keanu.
I am too.
I think that definitely represents an alternate universe or reality for Jordan Peele.
Yeah.
Before he did Get Out.
How do you write for a cat?
He wrote for a cat. You saw Keanu with us, I believe, didn't you?
I didn't see Keanu.
No, you didn't see Keanu? I thought you wanted to go see Keanu.
It didn't do well at all, but it was still really fun and I still really enjoyed it.
It was great, and legitimately everything this you just read off of this guy's list of things he's done, I love those things. I genuinely love those things.
Yeah, the thing that's crazy is that, like, if you look at all his credits, They're all very meta.
Oh, Community, you know, is things. One of the most meta television shows or pop culture in general that I've ever seen, ever.
Yeah, to the point where it actually gave me a headache. But I'm the only person that's probably out there that loved that actually preferred the season without Dan Harmon.
Ooh,
I think so.
Controversial opinion.
I know.
It's such an awful season.
Well, and this is also directed by, as I mentioned, Simon Kinberg. Now, you might know Simon Kinberg as being the person to ultimately kill Josh Trank's career. No, I'm just joking. but no, he's written a ton of films. He's written XXX, State of the Union.
Oh,
great. He's done Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Another winner.
He was the writer of X-Men The Last Stand, arguably the best X-Men movie. But to be fair, he also wrote X-Men Days of Future Past, which is the best X-Men movie.
Yeah.
And he'll be returning to theaters with the X-Men next week for Dark Phoenix, which will probably be the last X-Men movie in this universe because Disney owns the rights to it. And we'll probably see Jake Gyllenhaal be Wolverine in a few years.
Which is his directorial debut, importantly, in terms of feature films. Not known as a director.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really is, because he's never done anything. So this is a big week for Simon Kinberg. You know? So
he's got his TZ episode out.
Yeah.
He's got Sophie Turner and Dark Phoenix coming out this weekend. Or is it next weekend?
It's next week.
Okay, next week.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Imagine if he went 2 for 2. What a coup that would be.
I know.
It would be quite a coup.
Well, let's just say 2 for 2 could be for disappointment, because already for me, I'm just going to come out and say it. I think we already know based on my tone. Did not like this episode. I thought it was a perfect example and encapsulation, really, of what I hate about meta narratives. And what I hate a lot about this revival altogether is that it thinks it's so clever. And it really, for me, was just as explicit with its themes as anything else this season.
But I really, like, when we turned it on last night, for the first, 25 minutes, no, I would say probably 15 to 20, I was really into it. I thought it was really smart. I didn't think it was too much at first. I thought some of the horror was super scary. I loved the horror in it. And it grabbed my attention really fast. Like you said last night, you're like, oh, Jordan Peele is basically playing a version of himself from Extras, the TV show.
He is. Okay, that's so let's back up for just a second. So just to give, since we're not doing a synopsis, I'll just give a quick little, log line for what actually happens. So when we first start this episode, we actually think that this is going to be about Seth Rogen, who's a troubled writer who apparently is trying to write some sort of sci-fi apocalyptic story. And we discover and his wife is Betty Gabriel, who was in Get Out. So already we're like, ooh, season finale, star-packed episode. And then we see that you know, this writer who's been struggling, he comes up with this revelation like, ooh, I'll start the apocalypse. You know, I'll start my sci-fi story with the apocalypse. And then he sees outside that the apocalypse has happened. And we're getting the idea that already this is a pretty predictable story. And then we pull out and we see Jordan Peele do his narration. And then he breaks character and talks and says, can't we do a little bit better than this? Almost like a Wayne's World 2 sort of situation. And that's when we meet the real star of this episode, who's also a big A-lister, Zazie Beetz. So who's been in Deadpool 2, who's in Atlanta, one of the greatest shows that's on television right now.
By far.
Easily. And speaking of Easily, she's also in Easy. It was directed by Joe Swanberg. It takes place here in Chicago. And has also been in Invincible. She's going to be in Joker later this year. She's huge. So
I love her.
Love her. And she plays a writer for Jordan Peele's The Twilight Zone, who's kind of struggling with her own relationship with the series. Am I missing something here?
She's struggling with her own relationships with everything, period. She's estranged to someone on the phone. I'm actually not sure if it's like a girlfriend or like a relative. I don't know if that was ever like implicitly spelled out. But yeah, she's very tense. It's been a long, it's been a long 10 weeks and the Twilight Zone is almost over. And here's Jordan Peele riding her ass being like, hey, can we get in a better intro? Come on. You had one job.
And then things get really weird and blurry because she eventually does write a new intro. And then when they do it, it's something totally different. And it's about her. And she gets, rightfully terrified from it, starts wandering off. And we see that there's all the sets that we've been in the past 9 episodes. You get the grocery store from Point of Origin. We get the bar from the comedian. There's just a number of sets. And in these sets is the titular character itself, the Blurry Man. And now this Blurry Man has been in every episode this season. And this is something that we caught when we were...
I caught when we watched The Comedian the first time. Because he, Kumail Nanjiani's character walks out of the bar. And there's like just a quick frame of this man walking away. And it seemed like it was going to be important, but then they never touch on it. And I remember we were like, oh, what if it's like Rod Serling or something?
Yeah,
and that was 8 weeks ago.
Yeah.
I mean, respect for that, because I don't remember seeing the Blurry Man throughout the... I mean, we picked out a lot of things that we saw.
Yeah.
We were looking for a lot of Easter eggs. I do not recall seeing anything like that. And now I actually appreciate that at least they had... they had a sense of where they were going with this and what it was going to build up to, and that it wasn't just added in later. I assumed, because in this episode, they're backstage, and the editor of the show or a director of the show is showing them old footage and saying, look how he appeared in every episode in the background. That I didn't see as the show actually took place. So you guys are telling me you actually saw it throughout the series.
Just in the comedian. Yeah, I'm not going to pat my back that many times.
I'd be curious to see if the character pops up in other ones.
Oh, it does. It does. Yeah. So specifically.
You actually see it, or was it put in post?
Looking back and seeing actually for sites that have gathered them all at this point, I do actually remember seeing these characters when I was watching them. So in Nightmare at 30,000 Feet, when Adam Scott's character is looking at a magazine, we're pretty much... distracted by seeing Kumail Nanjiani's character from The Comedian on the magazine cover itself. But right next to Adam Scott at the magazine stand is the Blurry Man.
I might be wrong. The image is rather small. But on that same magazine stand, because I'm now reevaluating that same shot that, of course, we all saw, I think 2 rows below, might that be a picture of the Wunderkind?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the Blurry Man next appears at the college in Replay. And then after that, in A Traveler, that you could see that the Blurry Man is actually in the background at the police station. So that's kind of creepy. And I remember thinking that it was trying to understand if they understood all the characters that were in at the police station at the time. So you've definitely seen these things happen. So then even in Wunderkind, you could see him spotted, amidst the campaign workers that are busy organizing posters for Jacob Tremblay. In 6 Degrees of Freedom, the figure can be spotted it's out of focus in Alexa, which is DeWanda Wise's graduation photo, which that's a really deep one. I definitely didn't see that one. in Not All Men. This one, you really kind of have to focus, but it's during a lot of the chaos that's happening on the street. So that one, I don't think anyone really saw because
you can
just,
barely. It's a bit of a stretch.
Yeah, it's a lot of
looking at the photo. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the difference is when that's in motion, there's a bunch of men brawling, and there's just this one dude in a suit in the mist leaning against a lamppost. So in that context,
that's creepy. That's pretty eerie. And then in Point of Origin, he pushes past Jennifer Goodwin's Eve at the grocery store just as things are starting to, you know, really go bad. And then in A Blue Scorpion, this one's actually pretty creepy because when Jeff, Chris O'Dowd is walking through the hall of the university, you could see the blurry man like off to the side. So
here we thought the 10:15 might be what really unlocks something. And actually, if we're going by, again, just the finale here and what we get here, it's actually spotting the blurry man throughout.
Yeah.
It's sort of the bigger thing to spot.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you've mentioned all these blurry man appearances, and I feel that that does tap into something that I think is part of the one of the many malfunctions of this episode, which is, yeah, the blurry man was in all these episodes, and that's interesting. But the blurry man wasn't there as the blurry man, because the narrative of this episode says, yeah, you know, there's like in the background of these scenes, there's just this guy, this like extra or something who's just not supposed to be there. And that's so weird. And yeah, that's a spooky little, they're trying to generate this creepypasta vibe. They're trying to make it the three men and a baby like ghost.
They are. Yeah. They are. They absolutely are. I mean, they're definitely trying to make some sort of allusions to Slender Man.
Yeah.
But that's not sure. Who it is.
The reality is that actually, unless he's in motion in these shots, the blurry man is not blurry in these shots.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, in fact, not really spooky in many cases. So it's a weird thing to have, like, latched onto because they're painting this narrative and they're saying, this is the reality of it. And yeah, he's there, but he's also not really there. And this taps into another facet, which is that, you know, the blurry man ends up being, after stalking this woman, like, relentlessly, after there's a spooky stalkery message on these cue cards that Jordan Peele is reading, and you're like, who did that? I don't know. And then all these terrible things start happening as she's being chased, and all of a sudden, oh, hey, the terrible Slender Man-esque thing you were afraid of is actually just your old pal Rod Serling. No big deal.
The creator himself.
Because he's actually really violent towards her, too. Like, whenever she's in a set, he's like, throwing the bottles all come off the shelf. Like, she seems like she's in danger,
and she does actually get hurt.
Yeah, she trips and falls is like limping towards the end, and is very, like, you know, blatantly terrified. And I don't feel that would be his like way of going about it, you know.
Yeah, and then it ends on this note of like, that seems almost like Field of Dreams, where, you know, it's like, you know, you got to remember to be, you know, you can't let go of your childish things, and just, you have to embrace all realities, and you know, you can't lose sight of the imagination.
Be open-minded, expand your horizons. That's what the Twilight Zone's really about.
And it just seems so heavy-handed, and maybe it's just also because of the fact that it so leans on nostalgia. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that's been frustrating about this series is that it's trying so hard to embrace this idea of being, oh, we're forward thinking and, you know, we're capturing the now and we're looking ahead at the future. And yet this show has been so slavish to the past, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, even in tone, like the things I love, like I love that actually the stylistic quirks of the show are just in line and parallel with Rod Serling's original vision, from down to the credits, to the music that plays over it, to the way that, you know, Jordan Peele appears like Rod Serling. But there's also, it's juxtaposed against like what the show's like conceit, you know, tries to be at its very core.
Well, I agree.
Go ahead, Simi.
There's like a point in the episode early on where Sophie and Jordan are talking while he's like getting his beard brushed.
Yeah.
And he seems like the most, it's on purpose, but he seems so pretentious.
Yeah, he's like, it's heightened personality.
Exactly.
Just like the
there's
thing.
Even like a scene or a part where he like insinuates that he's, you know, it's him now, not Rod Serling, you know? But she goes as far as saying, like, oh, what I love about the Twilight Zone is that It's always a message. You know, it's not some idiocracy. There's always an underlying message. And as much as I like that in the original series, not every single episode needs to be that way. It doesn't need to be so, like, here's our message in big, bold print, you know, on a billboard of, like, don't buy guns or don't be racist. You know, it's like none of them make you think when you leave the episode because the episode has done all of the thinking for you.
Which is, again, do you see where she ends up in that last scene with Serling? They're going up the steps to a library, which we find out because we see the glasses. Those are Burgess Meredith's glasses when he's in that episode where there's been some sort of nuclear attack.
Time enough at last.
Time enough at last, right? He has all the time in the world to read books now. But he doesn't have his glasses. And that's just one of those series that ends with sort of this tragic irony.
Again.
And that, again, goes to show that there isn't always sort of a rhyme or reason, like you say, a lesson. So it does fit in with the message you're trying to get. Where I really struggle with this was this episode. We always talk every week, when did we sweat? You know, I'm usually sweating because something is topical and like, oh, my God, that's really how African Americans get treated when they, you know, deal with the police or something like that. It's too real for me. The Wonder Kid was too close to Donald Trump for me, right? This time I was actually sweating because I thought it was a decent bit of horror that was going on for the first time.
Oh, yeah.
There was a lot of things that scared me. I mean, anytime you have a place that's just bubbling with people, brimming with people, then the next second it's empty and dark and there's no one there. I love that idea. I loved how they used the set and everything. I'm with her. And because this is where I think I had no idea who the blurry man could be. You guys are picking it out. You guys were thinking of it weeks ago.
As soon as that dude showed up, it was clear as day to me who the blurry man was from the beginning.
See, it wasn't obvious to me, again, because all the things that are happening to her, right? She's being attacked. She's going to get hurt. She does get hurt. She trips over the tracks to the one camera, right? She is basically, I mean, she's in this terrifying situation. So then that's where I did think it could possibly be Rod Serling, right? But I don't get how that matches up. How does that connect? Why is Rod Serling doing this to her? How does it turn out to be that? I thought, I mean, this could have gone. I sure as hell didn't want the opening story. I didn't want Seth Rogen and that story to go. I was done. I was happy when that was over in 10 seconds.
Yeah.
But I had no idea why this great, like, 20, 25 minutes of horror turned into that ending that got, like you said, very Field of Dreams. That, like, why would it be Rod Serling who was doing all this to her? It didn't match up to me at all, so that was strange.
Because they did have, like, horror. It felt like a horror movie. It felt like, you know, Us or Get Out at first. It was genuinely scary. Like, there's a scene where she gets that book, and she's flipping through it. And she flips through it, the like, blurry man gets bigger and bigger as she goes through. And it, like, kind of reminded me of The Babadook a little bit.
Yeah.
But I was, like, genuinely scared for the first 10, 15 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's thrilling and chilling. And, you know, it's definitely, you know, leans on the horror tropes that are that get us all the time. The thing that's frustrating to me is that the middle is so juxtaposed against its bookends that for me, it's like it just felt perfunctory. Like it was just like, well, we need something to get to from point A to point Z. And it just felt superfluous in the end.
You know what it reminded me a little bit of Scrooge, where he's on a TV set. And, you know, again, sometimes they're filming, sometimes he's in his office. Sometimes it's just a normal day, right? Then all of a sudden, people disappear, things go dark, and a ghost is visiting him. It reminded me a lot like that.
Yeah. I mean, I agree 100%. It's funny. I was thinking about that one scene, because the thing was, a lot of people always criticize with Scrooge is that it's tonally inconsistent, which I disagree. Yeah. Like, but I love that about it because disarming.
I think it's a really interesting thing. I love, like, how they used the set in this. Yeah. I thought it could have done so much more. And I'll pepper a few questions in today. And I guess one of my questions might be, could they have taken this meta route and made it a good or interesting episode?
Yes.
Someone online actually suggested this, that I actually think this is interesting, is that why was it, you know, Zazie Beetz who plays Sophie? Like, why wasn't it Jordan Peele? You know, why wasn't it, you know, he's the creator. He's the one that's taking the Twilight Zone and going forward with it. So if the whole morality of this is that, you know, you got to move on and let go and move forward, wouldn't it have been more impacting if you had the new host be at the center of this?
Well, that's song? what I stopped and thought about at one time, right, is Jordan Peele's actually, in this case, sort of taking the side of, well, what's wrong with just a little bit of sci-fi? Can't something be entertaining and also have
so
a
message
too?
So he's already on board.
Yeah, because he's already on board. And let's face it, the Rod Serling original could sometimes also do those things too. You know, it was a mixture, right? So what I thought was interesting there was I almost said, is Jordan Peele almost, because some of the criticism, no doubt he's getting for this new Twilight Zone is it's been too topical, right?
Yeah.
It's lost some of that original idea, some of that timelessness. It's been so in the now and gritty with real issues that we're all dealing with, right? And I felt that sometimes too, even though I thought if he could pull it off, it would be a great feat. And he's done it a couple times.
Yes.
But I thought he was almost asking himself that question when he's asking her, you know, are you taking this too seriously?
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if he was almost sort of throwing that question out or that criticism about himself.
Well, that's another part of the narrative, like that's broken about this episode, is that it does, in that moment, it does present the question of like, oh my gosh, this episode's taking pot shots at this recent season so far. That's
absolutely
super weird. And then it cycles back around and goes even farther into a weird bit of satire when as Sophie's stumbling through like the situation running away, she's like talking to herself and all that. She has this like, she's like, this is crazy. Oh no, I can't say crazy because crazy is like insensitive to people with mental problems.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, which is in theory, it's taking social justice too far, which one could argue if someone has issues with stories that are about elements of social justice, you could make that argument against this series so far. So that, but then what is it trying to say? Because that message has nothing to do with the overall message or the Blurry Man plot or anything like that. What is Sophie's character arc actually about?
I mean, that was definitely, I think, one of the weak points here. Mm-hmm. I didn't understand, and I think this episode's doing different things, and I think it's probably trying to do too much, actually, a little
which
bit.
Which has been the main problem.
I do think Jordan, I don't think that was, again, a coincidence that Jordan, you know, that her lines that Cap just, you know, recited. I don't think it's coincidental that Jordan Peele says, maybe you're getting a little too serious, taking this a little too seriously, because that's been a criticism of some of his episodes. I agree with you. I'm trying to think, how did her situation, you know, really, going back to Idea of the Dark, how did that warrant all these things to go into place? Is she really the one who needed an intervention from no less
well,
than
she's just
Ron
a
Serling?
I just didn't think
it warranted it.
I think, in a sense, that she's just more or less just like a MacGuffin that serves as the creator of the show. I mean, she's a writer on the show, and without having to have Jordan Peele at the front and center of it, because if we're to believe that Jordan Peele's the creator or the host, is on, or the narrator is on board already and is pretty much on the same page as Rod Serling is at the end of this episode, then I guess the show is not only just reflecting on itself through Sophie, but also reflecting on the audience. And that's kind of confusing in a way.
Oh, it's definitely confusing. I think it wants to do everything, including Jordan Peele wants to have some fun and poke fun at himself a little bit.
Yeah.
Always getting popcorn, like you said, having his hair, his beard brushed and things. I mean, they're trying to fit a lot in here. And like you said, one of the problems with the show is when you try to do too much, what do you actually end up accomplishing at the end of the day? And like Cap said, I agree. I don't understand what the arc was. I don't understand why she's the one who needed an intervention from Rod Serling. Really.
Well, it's from her flashback that we see throughout the episode where she's a little girl and her dad is basically telling the mom like she needs to go out and talk with friends and not be so in tune with the television. You see that her obsession goes back like decades. Like she's been obsessed with the series as a young child. So I think that's why, you know, this Rod Serling picks her, you know, to kind of reach out to. But that being said, I still just don't think it was executed properly. I still was kind of like, okay, so just because she really liked the series as a kid, like everyone else, this is what's happening to her. Like this horror movie turned, like frequency basically is what it felt like to me by the end of it. Like this, like someone that's been terrorizing her for, and I'd like to mention that it's also the shortest episode of the season for 37 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden is like this friendly, you know, Casper the Friendly Ghost at the end of it.
And again, to go back to the idea of why she's so special, I mean, aren't we guilty of every, you know, thing she's guilty of too? I mean, just,
well, and I think that's,
you know,
what
in terms
it's
of like
to do.
Not spreading her horizons out, like sometimes always wanting neat and tidy answers to things.
Well, she seems to be the Rosetta Stone for, like, you know, for what this, you know, who, for the audience basically, you know, it's the writer, it's the critic, it's the viewer, which is a lot to put on one character.
My problem is when they do that, then it almost just skip everything that goes into the middle, skip that whole arc. You almost just go back to the end and remember, like, hey, guys, we're in the Twilight Zone. Remember, this is where you got to keep an open mind. This is where anything can happen. Don't lose that imagination. Don't lose what makes it magical. You know, that's almost like I have to skip right from if she's kind of representing everyone, I have to skip right to that as the whole point.
Yeah.
And again, it was very Field of Dreams.
Exactly. And the thing that I have a problem with it is that, all right, I get the core themes of this episode because, I mean, who couldn't at the end of this episode? He literally spells it out for you and says it as much as possible. But is it really necessary? What do we need to learn from this?
So what I got from the closing monologue, and I discussed this with you last night, was basically him telling us, like, hey, keep an open mind. It almost felt like Jordan Peele and, like, the writers had seen the reviews of these episodes and then were like, let's basically tell our audience to, hey, this is a new version of the Twilight Zone. Stop comparing us to the old one and broaden your horizons. Be open to new realities. So I felt like essentially his closing narrative was, stop being dicks about not liking the series because it's new and it's something different and give us a chance.
Mm-hmm. And then what do? They cue right into the season 2 theme of the Twilight Zone that we all know.
Yeah.
As they're heading into season 2.
Well, because they've been picked up. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
If you want to get conspiratorial about it, you could say that, well, we got this screener extremely late.
Mm-hmm.
And the Rod Serling composite that they created was very poorly done. And maybe because of the short running time and all that, maybe it was chopped to pieces at the last minute to create some kind of different narrative. Maybe that's why it's so confusing. Maybe that's why it's so imbalanced. Maybe that's why it doesn't have a clear message.
And I read, actually, that 3 different artists had to work on the CGI version of Serling. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry, but I've seen better versions of that and, like, holograms at, like, the fucking Super Bowl or something.
Well, you've seen better versions
better
of it
10 years ago.
You've seen better versions in the Tower of Terror ride, for Christ's
exactly.
sake.
Exactly.
Awful.
Which, like, reminded me of that, by the way. That was one of my illusions.
That's one of my favorite rides. And so basically what I got from the CGI version was he looks like it all feels like a video game. Even when he, like, kind of turns to the side and opens the door for her to walk through, it feels like the beginning of some, like, EA games when I was little.
Oh, it does. And, well, I mean, Cap and I were joking online today that I was like, the CGI that's used in Final Fantasy The Spirits Within, which was a movie that was from 2001, was better than this.
Well, and what's more, as you mentioned, Tower of Terror, that was, like, I don't know, 20 years ago or something, and that was done by compositing, like, I believe, mouth flaps from Serling or a stand-in actor and footage of Serling and an impersonator, which is essentially the same thing here because, yeah, it was, as Sammy said, 3 separate individuals. One was playing the body, one was playing the voice, and one was playing the face.
But again, the question I want to, like, the stress is, like, and definitely please go, jump on this, is why is this necessary for these themes right now? Like, doesn't this discredit and disassociate you from the entire revival?
Oh, I completely agree. Well, because what I like about the original series so much is that there's not an underlying thing connecting all of them together. And it was like, just because it's your finale doesn't mean that you need to make everything in this whole series, like, kind of come together. They're standalone episodes. It should go without saying that they all happen in the fifth dimension. This is all within the Twilight Zone. We don't need this final episode. If you're going to go meta, fine, whatever. But don't bring Serling in here to make it seem like, oh, we've been putting this blurry man in every episode and everything connects. It's like, that's not what's fun about the Twilight Zone. What's fun about the Twilight Zone is that you can tune into any episode, any season, and it's something different that you don't need to have watched the previous. There's no underlying connection.
It's also like slightly, and maybe this is just, you know, being mean-spirited, but it's a little slightly pretentious.
Oh, yes.
Too.
No, not slightly. Completely.
It is, yeah.
Like, to be like, oh, yeah, no, my, you know, the ghost of Serling's been through all these episodes or whatever. It just seems so, like, presumptive in a way. And I know that seems ridiculous considering that I'm being presumptive of, you know, a man who's been dead for decades, but it just, for me, was just, to quote Billy Crystal, they went too far. And honestly, like, even the premise of this, you know, you had mentioned last night, there's nothing really original about this premise either, because they did this in the original series.
So I know we're not, you know, sticking to a script, but obviously, like, I got a couple things for Light and Shadow. Mm-hmm. And this episode reminded me a lot of A World of His Own. It's from season 1.
In fact, it's the season 1 finale.
It is the finale, yeah. And basically, it's about a writer who the things that he writes about, or the like people that he characters he writes about, come to life,
which is literally what Seth Rogen.
Exactly,
Seth Rogen, sir. But then it
and
cuts.
Then at the very end of the episode, Rod Serling walks out and does his ending monologue. Mm-hmm. But then the writer is basically like, "No, don't say that stuff." Like they break the fourth wall and they talk to each other, and then it's insinuated when he like crumples up his paper and throws it into the fire that he's been controlling the Twilight Zone or the stories, you know. And that's a fine way to do that.
There's no moral in that. It's just a weird story.
Exactly. And so if they had just done that without trying to put the moral in, it's like that's the Twilight Zone doesn't always have to have a moral. Or if it does, you can walk away and kind of think about it.
Yeah, but the thing is like, but my point is that it's just like they play it in this sense here as if it's being this sort of like modern sort of like, you know, clever twist in this sense. And it's not. And it's like, and it's so, it's so emblematic of this weird, you know, one foot in the door, one foot out of like, well, we want to be in the future, but we also are still so fucking entrenched in the past. And that's my frustration with this episode, you know, you know, that's something that I don't think the show really knows how to contend with.
I mean, maybe they're walking into the distance because season two is going to be like much more like the original in that it is not connected and all we're going to say goodbye to all the weird little Easter eggs and everything. But even then, why did we have to have that meta dialogue? That's irrelevant. And then if you knew that you were going to do that enough to have written this episode, why did you waste our time with the episodes in this season that did fall short? And you knew it fell short.
Yeah.
Is that how you took the line when Serling turns to Sophie Gelson and says, we have a lot more work to do, or you have a lot more work to do? Is that what we're talking about?
Well, I guess. I think it's the idea that, like, you know, they're going to go through the door and we're going to be, you know, this is just begun, you know?
This is the real Twilight Zone.
I don't even know if it has to be just, like, the real Twilight Zone. It just seems as if this, like, this, like, clever sort of, you know, and this is why I can't stand meta stuff shit sometimes, because it thinks it's so fucking clever and it's not. And, like, and for me, it's like, It was just frustrating to think like they felt it was necessary to even have this. Like I thought that like what was so great about this is that, you know, especially in those first two episodes, and we could talk about the whole season as a whole at this point now because I'm going to start doing that, is that there was a confidence and a swagger to those first two episodes that this episode, particularly, you know, the Blurry Man episode, absolutely unravels, because then it becomes this whole sort of thing of like, you know, A, like, we're so clever, even though we're just literally copying the first season finale of the original series. And then B, it's supposed to suppose that the ghost of Rod Serling was supposed to be, like, you know, a part and lingering through all these episodes, which is so ridiculous to me.
But
like,
we also always say, hey, Grandpa's looking down on us now and smiling.
which is so dumb. Like,
because I genuinely don't think he would like these episodes. Like, no. I, you know, I don't think he would. And his daughter actually is a contributing producer to the show.
Yeah.
So I feel that they obviously had to have gotten the okay from her, you know, or like to do something of his likelihood. Like, don't you have to get approval from the living family members?
Yeah.
It's a leap, and it's 60 years later, so I'm not comfortable saying whether I think Rod would like it or not.
I mean, either way, painting him as like the severe threat that the Blurry Man represents not okay and makes no fucking sense.
It doesn't.
I agree with that. Yeah. But for the whole series, I think up to
that. I mean, sure, I think that there are things that he would like about it, but I think that he would be like, this wasn't what I was trying to do, you know?
I think it's always, in the same way, an honor, in a sense. That
of course.
Something you're creating is carrying on. I agree with Cap 100%. I have no idea why Rod Serling was a villain here. You know,
I guess you could make the argument that, like, Serling was trying to show the different elements that are in the Twilight Zone to this writer.
And to show
that sense of like that it could be, you could feel as if it's a part of a reality, because she, you know, in the beginning of the episode, she's just like, you know, I'm not really big on the, you know, whole genre thing and stuff.
I'll say one word for you, up the fucking stakes a little bit, that this writer kind of gets that.
True. But like, I think like,
it doesn't,
you know,
do enough for me.
You get to see all the elements that, you know, would have there, whether it's, you know, the horror, whether it's the science fiction of an apocalypse, whether it's even the superstition, because there's one part where she even like walks by like a, you know, a ladder and a couple other things, you know, the mirrors. So I could get that you can make the argument that like the sort of Serling Blurry Man is trying to just kind of walk her through these things and try to show and reveal that, you know, while they might feel far-reaching and imaginative, they are a reality.
Well, nearly killing her with the bottles of liquor and books.
Yeah. I mean, she doesn't die in any of these things.
But if you want to take that message of like a writer struggling with what the Twilight Zone is or isn't and journeying into the Twilight Zone and being inducted by Serling and just, you know, take out the weird, like stalking threat thing that happens,
sure,
then that would have been a logical thing to start the season with, like, not end the season, because when you end the season with it, it's just extraordinarily confusing because it presents the idea that it's trying to say something about what we've just watched, and all that does is confuse it and make bad episodes worse.
Yeah. Those are my questions. One I was going to ask, you know, I asked already, you know, is there a way to have ended this that makes it actually a decent episode? And the other thing I was thinking about too, I was thinking about a lot of things. I was thinking if this was the first episode, would it have been actually more logical if it was the first episode? But then again, I'm trying to think, like, that would have been a really dissatisfying, you know, entry point for me too. I wouldn't have been happy with that. Mm-hmm. I will say, I think this episode did a few things for me that I thought were interesting. I thought it did horror for the first time really well this season, which is something that's in the original, right? It's something that's part of the Twilight Zone world. I thought that it did make me ask the question, because she's, as a writer, trying to figure things out. It did make me ask the question, why do we watch the Twilight Zone? Mm-hmm. What do we take away from it? What do we enjoy about it? What fascinates about us? And that's something like Eleanor talks a lot about, how it makes her think about certain things. This one made me say at the heart, because that's what they're arguing. What's the Twilight Zone really about? I mean, that made me think about that. And I did think that there could have been a meta episode. Again, would it have been a great episode? I mean, for example, I like the fact that whenever the cards are put in there and all of a sudden the narration was about her, I like the fact that she was now in the Twilight Zone. I like the fact that the Twilight Zone is this flexible thing. It's this fluid thing that could even happen as you're trying to create an episode of the Twilight Zone. I kind of thought those were interesting ideas. Now, what they did with them, ridiculous to
me. Exactly. You know? It should have been one or the other. You know what I mean?
There were some good things going on here, but, you know,
it could have been a meta horror thing where she's in the Twilight Zone or this is happening to her, and Rod Serling should not have been input at all. Like, it would as a horror, like, episode, I think it did really well executing that. But I think adding him to the end, just, it confused me because I was on board and then I was like, this is tonally different. This is a different message than you were trying to send at the beginning of the episode.
It's also just fucking lame.
Yeah, exactly. Like, no, it is.
Even just like when you strip away the metaphors or where it leads to or anything else, the idea and conceit of this is just so stupid. And maybe it's just because I'm more of like the sort of cynical Generation X type, but like, I just think it's so lame. Like, it's after school special lame.
It's regressive. Like, it's not forward thinking at all.
Yeah.
Because this nostalgia lens thing, it has no place in the Twilight Zone. Like, it does not push things forward. It keeps things always one foot in the past.
Right.
Something that Eleanor wanted to bring up was that in the introductory episodes of this series, The Fifth Dimension, there was a question that was posed of, if there was an incentive to use fabulous and amazing effects, would something get lost? And in this episode, it seems like the gimmick of doing this weird Serling composite, something was most definitely lost. And there does seem like there was some kind of like a writing confusion. She also observed that, like, you know, are the Easter eggs symbolic or just cute? And it seems like in most cases, they're playfully significant to the episodes, just there for fun. But then this episode, it's saying, oh, but nothing, it's not as significant as you thought, and probably not significant at all. But at the same time, here's Rod Serling. Like, you can't, that's a mixed message. You can't do that.
Yeah, it wants to have it both ways for sure. And I mean, one of the things I've admired about this series is, yes, there was the Easter eggs, and
all of which are really lazy too, by the way.
Incredible.
But they're all the same fucking major episodes of the Twilight Zone. Even at the end here with like Time Enough at Last. Like, I mean, of course we're going to reference that one. Like, there's no reverence for some of the real deeper, you know, episodes that are there, you know, but whatever.
No, I mean, that's true. I mean, it could have gone deeper. They could have got more creative with that. They were definitely paying homage to the original, and I respected that. I was fine with that. But I thought, I mean, and we asked this a lot of times during the series, You know, is this really what the Twilight Zone's about? Especially when we got topical episodes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we kind of had to, we kind of said, you know what? We're not surprised. This is Jordan Peele. Look what he does with the horror trope. You know, I mean, yeah. He's going to do something topical. So I've been really, you know, I've admired Peele's willingness. I'm sure he's faced plenty of criticism, you know, for sort of doing his own thing with the Twilight Zone a lot of the time, not all the time, mm-hmm. but a lot of the time, was still, you know, putting little things back in there for old fans to sort of get a chuckle at, you know, if that does it for you. It hasn't been, to me, overly nostalgic at all. But now when you get into this, yeah, this played at a totally different level of that.
I was
uncomfortable with that.
I was a little worried with them being overly nostalgic in the sense that it just all these little token references in there were just, I leaned always more on the cute end of things because not only were just, again, they were just so easy. Yeah. You know, like if you're going to do an Easter egg and you're going to do some references.
Make us
and
look
stuff,
for it.
Yeah, exactly.
But they also, but I know this could be sort of, and I'll let you finish, this could be, you know, this could signify a bigger problem, right? But I also thought those things were so small. They're just cute little things. That's why they call them Easter eggs, right?
But they weren't, though. I mean, they were literally in your face in every fucking episode.
Well, they were in your face, but they weren't like...
Easter eggs, to me, are something you have to, like, fucking look for. They are, like, hidden gems,
essentially.
Okay,
then they weren't good Easter eggs,
right? No, exactly.
But they were also so small, they weren't affecting how an actual episode works. This was the first time where I thought, like, the nostalgia thing was actually affecting... what they did with an episode.
I agree on that.
I didn't like that.
But now in hindsight, basically, and especially to Cap's point, is that even looking back at those, like, think about all those Easter eggs. They were all literally close-ups. Like,
I
know. You know, you have like the devil that ran, you know, that from the Nick of Time. They zoom in on that. They zoom in on the puppet for Nightmare at 30,000 Feet.
And at the time, we admired it. But now you're saying, after seeing something like this last episode, maybe it wasn't actually, I mean, we actually thought
like
they
slavish
were,
devotion.
It's lazy,
Now it's actually lazy. It's funny because earlier in the season, we were kind of, I think, admiring that a little bit.
Because
we thought they were taking a great deal of care to do that.
Because at first it was like, okay, we got, you know, we got the Nightmare at 30,000 Feet homage. We've got the devil from Nick of Time. We've got Talking Tina.
Yeah.
We've got these, you know, titular characters.
And they kept repeating them.
But they kept repeating them.
Exactly.
And that was my problem.
What I'm trying to point out is I think it's interesting how this, what they ended up doing with Serling in this one and how they're looking back at the old. And
yeah,
like,
of course. Yeah.
Like Cap saying, marching off towards a new one. I think it's interesting how it makes us look back at the season. And that's what Cap's saying is part of the problem. It doesn't match. You know,
no.
Well, here's another part of the problem. And that is that there are, that this episode only stood to further highlight how there are so many other things out there that are doing what this show is purported itself to be doing and just not doing it. Well, hold on. Let me back up. There's so many things out there that are doing what this show is attempting to do well, and this show isn't doing it at all. Case in point, this episode called to mind extremely Casper Kelly's Too Many Cooks. There's a person in the background of all these things, and then there ends up being this weird pursuit that happens when the framing of a film breaks down and you see an actor run out of the film and start running through the studio and going through all these past scenes of things that have happened. It's the fucking same.
Yeah.
And Too Many Cooks, which is a 15-minute skit, a brilliant one, I might add, but like is greater than any single episode in the series except for Six Degrees of Freedom. And I recently watched a new Hot Chip video for a song called Hungry Child. There's an 8-minute long sort of like, you know, video film thing. It's a better Twilight Zone episode than most of these episodes.
I mean, this is the obvious one, but even like the best Black Mirror episodes.
Yeah, I was just
thinking that. This not one episode, maybe Point of Origin for me, and possibly, you know, Point of Origin, the comedian, I think the Wonderkin were pretty strong episodes. But even then, I look back because I have a lot more hindsight to have with Black Mirror because it's been around for a few years. Mm-hmm. But those early episodes of Black Mirror are on another fucking level compared to the stuff that's in this one.
I completely agree.
And I think a lot of this comes back to something that my fellow co-host on The Losers Club and Halloweenies, Justin Gerber, pointed out, and that he almost checked out of the series when he found out that Jordan Peele himself wasn't doing any of the episodes and writing them. And I think that's a big part, too. And I think that's really kind of it's a problem when you actually look back and say, all right, well, Jordan Peele, and this is someone that I looked at and I saw early on in those reviews. You could read it in my review on Consequence of Sound. I said, well, what I love about this is that we finally have a host that we can, you know, we have a confidence in. You know, we know that he's a writer and we know that he's connected into this world. And yes, his influence might have, you know, been there in the writer's room and everything, but he didn't write the episodes. And he might have story credit for Nightmare at 30,000 Feet, but couldn't we have had one episode where he wrote it and just show that you can do it like Serling could, mm-hmm. who wrote the majority of the scripts episodes. For the yeah. Twilight Zone? And I think that's a huge problem, especially when this is his show, and yet there isn't one episode in the entire first season mm-hmm. that has his name as written by.
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong.
That's a problem.
It is Jordan Peele's Twilight Zone.
It is Jordan yeah. Peele's Twilight Zone.
I mean, based on everything, the credits and everything we knew, I mean, I think Rod Serling, I want to say he wrote like the first 13 or something.
I mean, he was so, like, I mean, they have photos of him just like mm-hmm. sitting there chugging away at cigarettes because he just lives in the writer's room. And I get it that, you know, Jordan Peele was busy, you know, yeah. doing Us and producing 500,000 different things that he's doing. But like, it's still astounding to me mm-hmm. that like, I was even hoping at the end of the, like when we were watching
the
credits.
You were waiting for it.
And
yeah.
it was pulling off the credits because we didn't get who wrote this in the emails. I don't think we mm-hmm. did. But so at least I didn't look. I was just like hoping that like it said written by Jordan Peele and directed by Jordan Peele. Just something to end the season with his signature on it. And we never got it.
I mean, even if it was an episode that you didn't necessarily care for, the fact that he put his stamp on something in some way. I mean, I guess that's a question. I mean, I'm not as familiar with the background workings of television mm-hmm. and the world of showrunners and producers and those things. I know some people, they get on Reddit, they get on wherever. They love talking that stuff. They love the inside behind. They love it more than they actually love the shows.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's interesting to me that, you know, was Jordan Peele really, you know, she says in this episode, Sophie, I mean, obviously I want you on board. Well, how on board was Jordan Peele? Obviously it's Jordan Peele's Twilight Zone. Mm-hmm. Obviously he was involved in it. But, you know, there's a lot of ways that famous people in Flavors of the Month, and let's face it, he's a very talented guy, but he is a very big name right now. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of ways to get involved with something and not have your hand on a lot of the details. So I guess I am curious now that you bring that up. How involved was Jordan Peele? Was this more branding than it actually was Jordan Peele's The Twilight Zone? I don't know the answer to that.
I think it was more branding because to me, a showrunner leaving a show or not, you know, leading the way for a television series can completely make or break a TV show. If a showrunner leaves a TV show, they ultimately typically suffer.
Gilmore Girls, final season.
Or
Twin Peaks. Yeah. I mean, that's a big fucking, you know, obvious
or,
one.
What was I? Oh, American Gods. So American mm-hmm. Gods' first season was run by Brian Fuller, and then he left, so the second season hasn't been run by him. And they're trying to achieve the same aesthetic and overall tone, but when you don't have that person there who is, you know, quote-unquote show-running, it changes. Like, mm-hmm. And there are certain, like, do you think we'd have American Horror Story without, you know, fucking yeah. Ryan Murphy at the helm of it? We wouldn't. No. So it's odd to me that it's Jordan Peele's The Twilight Zone, but he has a million different writers, a million different directors, mm-hmm. you know, on this series. And it's like, we can't achieve an overall tone and consistency if it's not one person calling the shots.
Yeah, yeah. I guess whatever level he is involved in right now, I can only imagine that's going to lessen as this show continues for future seasons.
Of course, yes. He's an Oscar nominee, or he's an Oscar winner.
It also doesn't help that the show, in the end, just really didn't buzz or connect. And no. it might be because of the CBS All Access barrier there.
I think that's what it is.
But I don't. I think that's to a point. Because I don't think that if this show was really that good, mm-hmm. people would seek it out. Mm-hmm. And people yeah. have sought out millions of things left and right in the past if it's worth it. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that the buzz and the hype on this show ever got to a point where people were like, ooh, I have to go seek out this show. I mean, mm-hmm. maybe I'm wrong, but
you're not wrong.
Well, I mean, I'm scoping out the numbers for this show, The Fifth Dimension, and considering that it's chronicling a show that's behind a paywall, sometimes it does very well in spite of it. So, you know, there's a listenership to this program, which suggests that that's a percentage of the viewership of the larger program. Mm-hmm. So I think maybe mm-hmm. it is, you know, there is something happening there.
Well, I guess the question now I have, and this is kind of getting towards, you know, a little bit of a wrap up on feelings, is that like, are you even interested in the next chapter? Are you interested you could walk through the door with Sophie and Rod Serling?
I think I am. I enjoyed it enough. I know it's interesting because we haven't had Cap's perspective this season. Obviously, Cap didn't think very much of the series, especially when compared, and correct me if I'm wrong, but especially compared to other stuff that's out there. I'm not nearly as fluent in everything that's going on in, you know, in contemporary TV. I'm more of a classic television person, you know, in that sense. I'm a music editor more than anything over at Consequence of Sound, who just loves The Twilight Zone, who grew up with it. So this is really, I'm not watching things that are maybe competing with this. So, you know, again, I don't necessarily, you know, I can't do that comparison. But there was enough, you know, going on here that I enjoyed. I think, again, it tried to do its own thing, which disappoints me at the end where it didn't do its own thing.
Yeah.
It started off to, and then it didn't. I thought, again, God, I like that they went topical in some cases, and a couple times they pulled off. I mean, there's enough episodes. Let's just put this, so I'm rambling here. There's enough episodes that I came away saying, okay, I got enough out of that, you know, that I'm interested in more. I think I could say that. I was thinking today, though, as much as I enjoyed some of these episodes, I would say there's a lot of flaws to a lot of them that prevent them from being great television. Mm-hmm. I think they're good or average television most of the time. I was thinking, God, how many episodes? Because one of the things I do before I watch something new, I'm likely to watch something else for its 50th time. Mm-hmm. I love to go back and look at stuff, right? How many of these episodes or this whole season, what's the likelihood you're really going to go back to it?
None.
One or two episodes, but maybe not at all.
I would say that Glenn Morgan is the MVP of the series so far. And the work that he's done on this show, I'm never going to forget. Blue Scorpion was okay, but A Traveler and 6 Degrees of Freedom rocked my world. And I'm like, those are shining beacons in this. And for all, like, I feel like everything else, all the other episodes surrounding those two pieces are total flotsam. But those two pieces are really memorable pieces of sci-fi anthology television that I'm probably never going to forget, especially 6 Degrees of Freedom.
And can I just point out real quick, mm-hmm. that's the first time the word flotsam has ever been used on this podcast. So going out the cat. Very well done. Go ahead,
you know, it's clear that, you know, Glenn Morgan, he's a producer on the show also. It does feel as if this is his show. I wasn't as high on Morgan's episodes as you were. I thought 6 Degrees of Freedom was pretty solid. Mm-hmm. I didn't really like his two other episodes. I thought the Blue Scorpion was just missed its mark a little bit, and I felt that A Traveler in the end, I did enjoy while talking about it. I felt it was a little too disassociated from a lot of its themes at times. But for me, there are some episodes that I thought were just really solid, and again I think that the three that I would possibly maybe go back to would be like Point of Origin, The Comedian, and Wonderkin. But the thing is that I don't think that any of those really demand to be rewatched. I don't think any of them really demand to be rewatched, because again, so much of these themes that are being discussed in a lot of these episodes are so duh and obvious. And I don't feel as if the punchlines were so clever enough that, and original enough that I would want to go back to look and see, oh, well, how did they do that? Which you is said, what most of the time I'm trying to do with a lot of the original Twilight Zone episodes.
You said one of the themes you thought of Jordan Peele's reboot was to show us different viewpoints.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree, especially when it gets topical. It is trying to, you know, allow for, you know, people, again, they were dumb moments for you in a lot of these cases, but it was trying to allow for people for which they wouldn't be dumb moments to sort of understand a little bit better, which makes me wonder behind this paywall. And if I'm thinking what maybe the target audience might be, I wonder if he's really creating the show for the wrong audience. You know, it's not the audience that it's going to get to anyway, too. I wonder, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, I think also it would help that if a few more of these writers had, you know, look, you look at the original series, they were all writers that had, you know, a pedigree in sci-fi, you know, in writing sci-fi and writing episodic television. There were definitely a few instances here, especially, you know, when you go back to Replay, which people had never even written, you know, teleplays before. And I, that's a problem when you're
and it
dealing
shows.
And that's
it
a problem. And this isn't just like, you know, this is the NFL. No, I'm just like, this is the big leagues. Like, you need to have, like, you know, veteran writers, which is why, like, you know, someone like Glenn Morgan could do that, because he literally has, you know, decades
Exiles,
of, you know,
yeah.
you know, experience under his belt.
I mean, you could even take unconventional choices still, but people who play in the genre, like Casper Kelly, who did Too Many Cooks, or Fatal Farm, who have a similar, like, perverse sensibility of doing, like, reality warping vignettes and so on.
Like the RoboCop video.
Yeah.
Like C-27.
Or any of the last season of Lasagna Cat, yeah. which is just unreal. I mean, you want to talk about someone that knows how to do meta in a way that's going to blow your mind. Because that's my thing with meta, is that, you know, and this episode is so lazy in its approach to meta. Like, if you're going to do meta now, you need to fucking go all out on meta. And which is why it's so staggering that, you know, the writer, you know, of this has written for Rick and Morty, which is probably, look, I hate the fan base for Rick and Morty, but they know how to do meta better than most people out there. And you really got to achieve another level of it if you're going to fucking do meta at this point. And it's, you can't just lean back on, you know, the conventional, like, well, actually, this is just the real set, you know, like, that doesn't do it, you know, anymore. And, like, to your point, Cap, like, all those names that you referenced would have done something that would take meta to another level, I feel.
Yeah. I mean, and Tim and Eric's bedtime stories, I mean, like, we know that Jordan Peele and Tim Heidecker have some kind of a relationship.
Yeah.
And consistently, he and Eric Wareheim have done in 15 minutes what this show fails to do in an hour or 37 minutes, as is the case may be. But weird journeys that will give you some kind of experience that you're never going to forget. I mean, generally a little bit more aimless than a Twilight Zone episode, but
the whole point of the Twilight Zone is to take you somewhere you've never been, somewhere unusual.
and that's just not fucking happening.
No, it's not.
We just lost an octave somewhere.
Yeah, well, the thing that I would say is that, all right, so if I was to, you know, designate some rules for the second season,
okay,
I want 30-minute episodes, no more Easter eggs, because we don't need the nostalgia of this. The Twilight Zone is anti-nostalgia.
I agree
season.
With that, too. But again, to my point, I felt that a lot of the series tried to do that. Again, I agree. They put in things for fans and things you may not want to see. And that's fine. I mean, I think that's debatable. I think Jordan Peele tried to, just like he does with most of the things he's trying to do now, he tried to do something that, like you said, Michael, all season long, that shows worldviews. You know, he's trying to do so. He believes that, just like Sophie was saying, that, you know, art could do more than entertain. He believes that, or else he wouldn't do the sorts of things he does.
No, and I agree with that. Sure. No, and I think that the show really did do that well. And I think that the focus on diversity and trying to show those diverse voices is something that this show didn't have in the
beforehand.
So
here's my question, though. A lot of those episodes, or what, there was like four or five, let's say, very topical episodes or so. I mean, like, you could argue last week was about gun violence. Didn't have to be.
No,
with the Blue Scorpion,
wasn't,
right?
But yeah.
So let's say like five of the episodes were topical. And we thought that only one or two of those really kind of, you know, carried its weight, so to speak. So if Jordan Peele's Twilight Zone is going to be one that tries to talk about the world around and what's going on, more so than something timeless like The Comedian or what's going on in someone's head like Nightmare 30,000 Feet, what does he have to do? Because those were, sometimes the tone was off from the writing. Sometimes it was clearly just rushed. The pacing was terrible. Sometimes the acting was stiff. Like,
I can tell you right now.
You know, what has to get better? What do they have to do to make those types of
tell.
Episodes work?
Yeah.
Show versus tell.
That's a good
rule.
Stop
telling
us.
Yeah. That was the biggest folly with every one of those episodes that we're trying to be now. You're telling. Mm-hmm. I mean, literally to the point where they were doing it with exposition throughout the episode, and then you did it again and doubled down on the lesson at the end.
I think tripled and quadrupled down before you got to the lesson, usually. Yeah. There were some very, very painful lines of dialogue.
To show.
We like Point of Origin because they went about as light on the telling, as much on the revealing as they had. Yeah. It could have gone lighter.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. That would be my first rule. Show us more, tell us less. Yeah. I agree with you on that. That'd be a great rule for the second season. Assume your audience is a Twilight Zone audience. Assume they're sophisticated.
Yeah.
They don't need, you know, banged over the head with them.
Because Sterling certainly didn't.
Exactly.
Know, so why
make
would
our
you
job
now?
Tougher. Make us work. And I don't want to just have to watch, you know, Peele's narrations or listen for a couple lines of dialogue to know what the episode was about.
Yeah, that's a good point. The something that Eleanor wanted to put out there. I'll read her prepared statement. She said that this is reflecting on how it just isn't necessarily at the same caliber, even from a grammatical perspective, and coming from Serling, that's really important. She says, for the grammar perverts out there, it did bother me that Serling said at the end of this episode, she has awoken, which, while technically possible to be correct, this choice of words is controversial and doesn't flow, which makes it particularly frustrating coming from, quote, Serling's, quote, mouth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Serling was a writer first. Mm-hmm. That's what he was doing. He was alongside people like Reginald Rose, who did 12 Angry Men. Mm-hmm. He was sitting there and he was writing things that we think of as literature today. Mm-hmm. You know, so I agree with that. And that's where, when the writing is really, really, when it's again telling and not revealing, when it's really ham-fisted, when it's painfully so, when the dialogue just doesn't flow, when we hear things like Eleanor came up with right there, she pointed out that to me sometimes is where it, I'd like it to go back towards the original. Yeah. The quality of the writing is definitely not always there.
Well, let's doors this.
Now we have done all we could do. If we've been successful, well and good, there are no problems. But if, on the other hand, this final treatment has not achieved the desired result, please remember, Miss Tyler, that you can still live a long and fruitful life among people of your own kind. All right, Miss Tyler. Here comes the last of it. I wish you every good luck.
Let's doors the episode and then the season. Cap, let's start with you.
All right. I'm going to give The Comedian 3 doors, Nightmare at 30,000 Feet 2 doors, Replay 3 doors, A Traveler 4 doors, Wunderkind 2 doors, Six Degrees of Freedom,
good call,
5 doors. That was an untouchable episode. Not All Men, 1, if not 0. So bad.
Yes, I agree.
Point of Origin, 4, Blue Scorpion, 3, and Blurry Man. It was well shot, and there were some cool things about it, but it's so confusing. It is so close to being a 1, but I'm going to give it a 2. Mm-hmm.
And we don't have to do, because we've already given our doors and past episodes, right, and Cap hasn't. Up, so, you know,
was there anything in there that Cap said that shocked anyone?
Just the Wunderkind.
I'm with on the Wunderkind.
I know.
What did I give it, 1.5 or 2? I thought it was a pointless episode. Obviously, we all hated the one about the meteors.
Yeah, I think everyone that pretty much agree on that one.
And also, I've heard from people that when I say meteors, it sounds like I'm saying meat eaters. It's a very it sounds very carnivorous when I pronounce it.
That could have been a more interesting episode.
And possibly. We could have done 1 hour and 20 on that. But let's okay, Cap, I'm sorry.
So what was your overall season rating?
I guess it was averaging out to a 3. And you know what's funny about these numbers is these numbers are reflective of, I was trying to consider the Twilight Zone as a whole, but even still these numbers ended up just reflecting their status within the confines of this season, because truly most of these can't be judged against the originals. Like Replay, for example, has some really strong, really genuinely tremendously strong parts to it, but then falls apart in that third act.
Mm-hmm.
It does not hold a candle to many tighter Twilight Zone episodes that have strong messages like that, which is a shame. No. And does go back to maybe an hour is wrong. Maybe these should not be an hour long.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it in the confines of what this series has created for itself in terms of quality, it's sort of middle of the road. But there are, of course, some significant exceptions to that rule.
Yeah. Well, Sammy, doors this.
So for the episode, I'm probably going to give it probably like a 2.5 door. Mm-hmm. Only because I loved the horror aspect of this episode. I thought it, like, I love horror. It's probably my favorite genre aside from fantasy above all else. So there were moments in this episode where I like genuinely was like, oh, that was scary, or that did something for me. And then it just completely fell apart in the third act, which almost every episode in this whole entire series has done. It's almost like Stephen King in his Coke years, like, really didn't know how to finish a story.
Yeah.
And that's unfortunate, because some of them started off really strong, then ended up being like, you know, 2s or 3s for me that could have been easily 5s if they knew how to, you know, stick a landing. The only reason I will probably go on to watch the second season, if not for this podcast, is because I am such a completionist that I can't not finish something, regardless of hating it. I mean, shit, I've watched fucking 14 seasons of Supernatural. I think that should go without saying that. I like to finish things despite them being good or not.
Mm-hmm.
For the overall season, if I'm doing it out of five, again, I think I'm going to do 2.5. Like, I really did. I had more qualms with the series than I had positive things to say about it. If you go on IMDb right now, it's currently at a 6 out of 10. And for the last like 7 years, I have stuck to only watching things with a 7 or above on IMDb. and so that disappoints me that I have made an exception now for this television show.
Yeah. Well, Matt.
Why do we think it's coming back? What are the theories if it hasn't?
Oh, yes, it's been signed on for a second season.
Yeah, but why do we think it was signed on?
I think the initial buzz and the response that CBS All Access had in the first few episodes was enough for them.
And they need content. If they want to be a streaming service like a juggernaut, you know, such as Hulu or Netflix, they need content, especially now to compete with Disney Plus. If they don't have a show like this, people aren't. I mean, the only other fucking show on CBS All Access that people actually maybe pay to have the streaming service is the Star Trek show on there.
Yeah, Star Trek Discovery. So.
Well, maybe CBS All Access can take a hold of the tick since Amazon wouldn't greenlight it for a third season. That's a worthwhile program on a streaming service that people should watch.
Well, they're going to have The Stand next year, too. So I mean, there's going to be some reasons to go on to CBS All Access. So we'll see. I mean, Matt, doors it.
I think it's appropriate we use doors because this is the end, at least of season one.
Yeah.
This episode was actually very, very, it was a microcosm to me of most of the season where there was something I was on board with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was with it. I thought, I mean, it was, again, I've explained why I thought it was genuinely scary at times and I was ready to go with it. And then they either, you know, throughout the season, the pacing was off, or they rushed a major theme, a really rich theme, or they tried to do too much, or they clearly didn't know what they wanted to do. There's been so many times this season where 50, 60, 70% of the episode I was on board with.
Mm-hmm.
And they couldn't execute, like Sammy said, stick the landing. This episode, another case of that. I'll give it 2 doors.
Oh.
If it wasn't for the Field of Dreams, Rod Serling ending, I give it more.
Yeah.
I liked a lot of what was going on. But 2 doors for it, and we've talked enough about it. For the season, I think 2 episodes are totally unwatchable for me. The Wonder Kind and Not All Men, my carnivore one. Yeah, Not All Men. Those two I couldn't even watch. The other 8 of them, I'd say there were 2 or 3 episodes I really, really enjoyed or loved. So you're still dealing with, after all that's said and done, 5 or 6 episodes where they had me, and then they lost me. And that's frustrating. It gives me hope that there's some sort of learning curve, and they could figure that out. Maybe it's different writers. Maybe it's Jordan Peele being more involved than he was. Maybe it's a 30-minute show and not a 45-minute show or an hour show. I'm not sure. But it gives me a little bit of hope that they can correct it because they hooked me in, and I wanted to enjoy it. Many of the times, even when it came out sort of flat, it didn't stick the landing. So for the season, I'd say again, like most shows had me 60% there before they lost me. So I'm going to go 60%. I'll go 3 out of 5 doors.
I'm going to go 3 out of 5 doors for the season as well, Matt. And I think that's a fair rating for this because when the show was pretty high as it was with the, you know, for me, the comedian or, you know, the Wunderkind, because I'm going to go flip side that one on you too.
I'm going to die on that hill.
And also Point of Origin.
Or die on that operating table.
Or on that operating table.
Yeah. I thought all 3 of those were highs. So there's definitely thrills to this. I thought there was a lot of promise with regards to what Jordan Peele.
Promise is a great word.
Yeah, with what Jordan Peele can bring. And I think that, you know, possibly next season, since he's not going to have us and he's not going to be in pre-production or post-production on that, he could possibly, you know, go sit down and write a couple episodes. That'd be awesome. I'm very interested to see what happens with the second season, to see where it goes and if they are going to move forward as they suggest in this episode. But, oof, yeah, this episode, surprising because Alex Rubens, the writer, actually wrote The Comedian. So I'm shocked that, you know, it was such a letdown in terms of the bookend. But so episode for me is getting a one. You could, I think, horror elements and sci-fi elements and the scares are easy to do. If you've been in the business, as Simon Kinberg has, for decades, and I feel you should be able to nail those things. But it's such a setback to everything that this show was kind of pretending to be in those like first few episodes that I was just kind of sitting there mouth agape that this could happen. And also PS2 Rod Serling is just a disservice to not only just this entire series, but the original one as well. So let's not do that again. So yeah, for me, I think that's a fair three and a one. So there we go.
Now you said Jordan Peele, there won't be any us in the future for him, but will there be us in the future, Michael?
Well, that's a good question, Matt. And that's going to depend on you, travelers. You're going to have to get the word out for us. You're going to have to leave us reviews on Apple Podcasts, on Stitcher, on wherever you can leave reviews for podcasts. Wherever you're listening to it, please just give us those old five stars. Give us five doors. You know, I think we did a pretty good job this season. And also follow us on our socials, the Fifth Dimension Podcast on Facebook and Instagram. Sammy, you've been keeping that
I'm
updated.
I'm trying my darndest.
You're going to keep that black and white aesthetic going?
I sure as shit am.
All right. And you can also follow us individually. Matt, where can they find you?
I'm on Twitter. You can talk to me about the show and a lot of other things there. And it's at Mr. Matt Mellis. So MrMattMelis. Come All talk right. to me. I'm lonely.
Oh, you're not too lonely. I'm there with you all the time.
Like I said, I'm lonely.
That is a stab to the back with no punchline like the Twilight Zone usually has it. And Sammy, where can they find you?
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at SRKDAL. It's my initials. So SRKDALL.
Mm-hmm.
Where we can chat about various pop culture things. I'm always willing to, you know, partake in a convo about that. And then again, on the Instagram as well for the Fifth Dimension, I'm running it. So please make sure if you're listening to us to tag us and I'll maybe add you to the story.
Oh, how about that? And Cap, where can all our travelers find you?
Well, first of all, if you're going to be missing out on Eleanor's tremendous insights like you've missed out on this episode, you can find her on Twitter at Eleanor Sparkle. As for me, I'm at Cap Blackard wherever you do social networking. In fact, you can find both Eleanor and I in a forthcoming episode of my long-running podcast, Nerdy Show, where Eleanor and I are going to be getting very up close and personal and digging into some major life changes in fascinating ways. She's going to be interviewing me about my gender transition and a lot of other topics in the orbit of that. You can also hear her on the Call of Cthulhu Mystery Program in episode 3 of season 2. She plays a librarian. That's audio fiction, tabletop role-playing turned into an immersive cinematic audio drama. You can find it at CthulhuMystery.com.
Well, I'm going to be looking for both of those.
Yeah,
especially
definitely.
The project that you just announced on here. And is a very longtime friend of yours. That's seems like my number one podcast episode for the summer, for sure. and again, I didn't mention this also, but you could find, obviously, with the Losers Club and Halloweenies, we're going to be talking about everything in Stephen King and Freddy Krueger
and spooky shit,
spooky stuff. So we're around, and you'll be around too, and you know, and hopefully we'll all return next year to talk about Jordan Peele's The Twilight Zone season 2 on CBS All Access. Maybe even before that, we'll talk about season 1.
Spaceball 2's The Quest for More Money.
Yeah, we're gonna talk about we'll have a special Spaceballs episode in the Fifth Dimension now. Ooh, it's been a long night, and it's been a long journey, and I think we all need to get some much-needed sleep. But until next time, if there is one, keep your eyes on the stars and your feet on the ground, and we'll be waiting here in the Fifth Dimension.
Consequence Podcast Network.